This is CliffCentral.com.
Marnus Broodrijk is an entrepreneur and an author. He's just given me his book now. I mean, we have a lot of mutual friends, and I've obviously, you know, seen you. You've been on TV, and I've heard your story from a number of people, but we've never met, which is odd in this country.
It is definitely odd.
It's small. You know, it's a small market. Yes. There are only so many people in it. You would think that we would have bumped into each other at some point. Nothing.
Definitely. I don't know how it happened.
Are you avoiding me? Is there something you want to tell me?
Definitely not, but I'm so happy to be here, so thanks.
No, it's very nice to meet you. So, Marnus, the thing about you that everybody says is that you've got this real business brain. You've just got this ability to make things work, to take something small and turn it into something big. You've got an interesting hiring practice we'll talk about in a little while. You've got an interesting idea of how money works, which I'd also like to get into. But you were a self-made millionaire at 24. You had no debt. You had $1 million in your bank account on the day after your birthday. That must feel pretty good, and that's a very rare thing. You knew it when you saw it, right?
No, I think it's funny. When you're in that position, you always look for the next thing, and you never appreciate where you are. And even now, I'm looking at it again. So looking back, I think it's cool, and I think it's – I really found out the value of it when other people started recognizing it.
But it is rare. I mean, it's not something everybody can do.
I don't know. I think you forget about those times. So now I'm thinking, why wasn't I as successful maybe 2 years prior to that? Why didn't I do it in school? Why wasn't I 16 and I did it? So you forget where you were coming from.
Do you think that you will be as critical of the current you 10 years from now?
For sure, definitely. Mm. So you're learning every day. You never stop learning. And looking back, you wish you knew it earlier on in life. But I think it's about enjoying that journey and not looking at the destination all the time.
Well, that's a good point. And most of the people that I've met, and I'm sure it counts for you as well, that really have done well, that have material success, don't start with that in mind. Like, they want to do something either that's different, they want to do something better than anyone else has done it, or they want to change something that they don't like the look of. But they don't do it to get rich.
I think there's a mix of it. I think many people started just purely for the money. The world of entrepreneurship it's difficult. And if you just do it for the money, you're never going to survive because you're going to have challenges all the time. And I don't think money is a big enough drive to get that done. So many people start with other things. And the moment you start doing that, doing it for the pleasure of it, suddenly these challenges are actually okay and you can pull through them.
So when you wake up in the morning, you're excited to go to work. You're excited to do things.
I go through stages, I think, like everyone else.
I'm glad you're admitting that, because some days I get in here, I'm like, oh, for God's sake.
And I think that's a problem, because we're so critical of ourselves, and I shouldn't feel like this. Why am I feeling like this? I'm such a loser today. And you're not. You're going to have those days. So overall, yes, I wake up, I'm super excited, but some days I wake up and I'm like, I don't want to do this.
It's honest of you. And a lot of people can't admit that too. They expect you to be consistently, you know, in kill mode.
Mm.
And you can't be. Mm. And some days you're just down, and some days you're sick, and some days people are irritating to you. Mm. And you know how it goes. It's being human, right?
Definitely. But I think when we look at other people, when we look at the media, we've got this expectation that we should always be hustling, going out. It's always going great. The economy isn't growing at the moment. But when we're talking to other entrepreneurs, they're all saying it's going so well.
Those are the worst. When you get into a room with a bunch of other people you respect, usually, people you admire and people who've done well, because it can deteriorate. Like, I prefer to have the conversations about what's not working, because I think those are the more interesting ones. But it can deteriorate into a, yeah, it's going really great, and boast, 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 yeah. brag, look how big my dick is, I'm the winner, what are you doing? And then you're like, you think of yourself, because you don't look at it in perspective, obviously, when you're in it, and you go, oh, I'm such a failure. You know, you look at these other guys, and you're like, they're so much better than I am.
For sure. So I think you really need to look at your own journey. And to getting back to the previous point, just there's going to be days that you're not going to feel well, and that's okay. And you're going to have challenges, and that's okay. And you can't compare with others, and that's also okay.
So have you always had this kind of attitude, or what were you like as a kid? Did you think this way? Did you behave like a winner?
Mm. So I think many people get motivated by beating someone else. I've never been like that. I've never, ever been motivated through that. I've always been motivated by being better myself. So I don't wake up in the morning and say, I want to be better than this. I want to prove this person wrong. I just want to be better myself. So I've always been like that, but not competitive, competitive with myself.
That's quite healthy.
I think so.
Where do you think it came from? I mean, did you just have the right ingredients as a kid?
I don't know. I look at other people and complaining where they are, but then I say to everyone all the time, like, wherever you are now is 100% a result of the things that you've done in the last 12 months. If you're fat right now, I promise you for the last 12 months, you didn't train, you didn't eat well.
What you're talking about is personal accountability, is responsibility, that you can't blame external factors and you can't blame other people, right?
Definitely not, but we're constantly looking for external factors. We always want to blame.
But you understand that's an important distinction between you and a lot of people. And again, I don't want to go into a huge psychological evaluation, but the fact is most people go through life trying to find reasons why they won't succeed and trying to find other people to blame for their lack of success. And then when it doesn't go their way, they feel, well, I'm still okay. I'm still a good person. All of these things happened to me.
Yes.
You know, and therefore it's not my fault. I'm not going to feel guilty about it.
Yes.
That's the opposite of you. Who made you like that? Did you have parents who were very kind of into do your own thing? And if you fail, great. If you succeed, great. But don't come and blame us.
No. I grew up in Arrowsmith. Have you been to Arrowsmith?
It's a horrible place. What a horrible place. What did you do all day? Did you throw rocks at each other?
It's
what
a huge cold place.
It's like Afghanistan.
There's a lot to do for kids.
Like what? What did you do?
And like
you built forts.
There's lots of dams and
the Battle of
farms.
Santa Ana and Rorke's Drift. What did you do? Come on.
No, I think all the things that kids don't do nowadays. We went out camping and fishing and hunting and.
You have brothers and sisters.
I do have two brothers. Yeah.
Okay. Were you youngest?
Yeah, I was the youngest.
Did they beat you up?
No, not really. Not really.
Were they competitive with you?
Not at all. I'm quite younger, so there's an 8-year gap between me and my older brother. So.
Did they mostly just let you tag along, or did they try to ignore you?
Yeah, so I think the life that I had, and that's what I wanted to say earlier, is I was on my own and I had my life, but that was it. No one pushed me into doing anything. I didn't have a lot of interaction with them. I had a great relationship with my mom, but no one pushed me into something, and I could have been okay with that life, but I always wanted to push myself, and I think that's where it came from, where I said, like, this is what I have, and it's okay, but if I want more, I need to get it myself.
Okay, but this is really important. That decision that you wanted, the ability to make a rational choice that you wanted more. A lot of people don't know how to get there. Maybe they're not equipped with that. A lot of people are motivated by the lack of resources. Maybe when they were younger, they're like, I never want to be poor again. That's going to motivate me. For some people, it's that they want to give their children a life. Now, you were at an age where you didn't have kids of your own. You didn't come from like abject poverty. So it wasn't like you were running away from something. Life was okay, as you say.
No, life was actually not okay. Life was actually bad. For me, it was okay. But that was my motivation. I never want to be in this position again.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys didn't have everything you needed when you were kids.
No, not at all. And I think as we grow older, everyone thinks they grew up poor. But I really believe that we did. Like my mom raised me as a single mom, and they were really nice when we didn't have anything to eat. And so, yeah.
What would she do, like boil a shoe?
I mean, I don't think I've shared.
What did she do?
I don't think I've shared this story.
Tell me.
Ever before, but the one night I got home or something, and it was like early, like 7, and I went to a room and she was already in bed, and I'm like, what's going on? And she was crying, and then I'm like, what's wrong? And she said, it's the first time that I really don't have anything for you to eat. And I'll always remember that. And then I pretended that I wasn't angry, and I'm like, no, mom, don't stress. I'm really not angry. It's actually okay. And like I said, I don't think I've shared this story, but it's been at the back of my mind for all my life.
Well, what's interesting about you is that you don't ride on it, if you haven't been telling this story to everyone, it's not like you think of yourself as a victim. But it was interesting the way that you reacted. And again, this is a little amateur psychology, but you were like, don't worry, Mom, I'm not that hungry.
Yeah.
It was you made it about her. You immediately kind of tried to help instead of, oh, wow, poor me. It's that you do understand. Yeah. Like, there's something about that, the way that you're raised, whether it's an attitude that your parents instill in you, whether it's something instinctive that's just bred into you. I don't know. But that is like, there's a winning thing attached to that. People who've had either a lot when they were little or very little, it doesn't matter. It kind of matters that they take responsibility for themselves. How old were you when that happened?
Yes, I was probably early high school, like 14, 15.
I mean, it takes a huge amount of emotional maturity to say to your mom, to realize like she's in a position where she's totally disempowered. She can't actually do for her child what she needs to do as a mother, which must be the hardest thing for a parent to have to face. And for you to then be like wise enough, mature enough to go, ah, don't worry, Mom. I'll be okay anyway. I mean, what were your thoughts of? Because to see your parent like that is not easy. How did you go to sleep that night?
Yeah.
Did you cry?
I can't remember that I cried, but it was definitely something that I would always remember. And I always had a lot of respect for her, and I think that's maybe why I said it's okay, because I knew that she was trying. Since I was small, she worked 2-3 jobs when I was young. So I always knew that she tried. It wasn't like she was sitting at home and not wanting to do anything. And I think that's maybe also why I understood it a little bit better, or why I was more sympathetic with it.
Manus, when you think about what you said to her again, don't worry, I'm okay. And do you think maybe you were making a promise there as well about how you wanted your life to turn out? And about how you'd want to change your life and bring hers along with it. Mm. And almost, you know, herskep die toekomst, amper. Like you saw a way to create a future where you wouldn't have to have that kind of nonsense happen again.
Yes, definitely. I think throughout my high school career, definitely, I've always thought of that and saying that I will definitely create something bigger. And it was through entrepreneurship. I'm writing in my book, in my opening paragraph, about that I was in Standard 4 and we had this entrepreneurship day where I sold stickers. And that was my first experience of making my own money. And what that opened in me is the possibility that I can make my own future and I can make my own thing. And that's been in the back of my mind throughout high school, that there's something out there where I can actually solve my own issues.
I mean, could you ever have imagined at that age that you'd end up on a TV show deciding whether or not other people's business plans were going to work? And that's incredible, right?
When I was 22, I just finished my articles and I came to Joburg. My mum rented a bucky and we came up from Harry Smith to Joburg, 22 years old. And Gareth, I had three things.
You had a bed and you had what, 37 grand?
That was it in the bank. And I said, in 10 years, I want to have my own business. I want to have an apartment in Sandton and I wanted to earn 30,000 rand a month. For the Harry Smith boy, that was financial freedom. I thought if I could get to 30,000 rand, I'm sorted.
Yeah.
And that's where it started.
That's like this tool that people talk about called visualizing, right? Being able to project an image of how you'd like the future to be. Mm. I think a lot of people get stuck with that too. And maybe you can give us some advice about how, particularly for someone young and inspired who has ideas, being able to project an exact future, like you even had an amount that you wanted a month. You wanted an apartment in Sandton. I mean, these are very specific things. You have to have dreams that aren't general. They have to be very particular.
Yeah, definitely. So it was a warped picture back then, because when I got to 28, and if I had only that, I would have been very disappointed. But I think it's super important. And with entrepreneurship, I really, really think it's important to have. And people talk about visualization, positive affirmations. I don't know what it is, but you somehow need to distort your reality to say that mine is going to be different. So regardless of all these challenges coming to me, I know I'm going to get out there. And just by doing that, your whole approach to life is different.
Well, another thing you say in the book is that you never stop learning. That, I think, is valuable, too. It's something that I find very important. Every day there's someone I can learn something from. Every day I'll find out something I didn't know the day before. A hunger to learn is probably an essential ingredient to success anyway, isn't it?
So I'll tell you an interesting story. The other night I met Ivan and Lynette, the founders of Diskin.
Oh, yes.
And at an awards evening in Sandton, and I had my book with me, and it was just prior to the launch. And Ivan said to me, like, what book is that? And I said, no, it's 90 Rules for Entrepreneurs. And he said, wow, I would love to read it. And I said, geez, Ivan, you just built a 20 billion rand company. I don't think you need to read 90 Rules for Entrepreneurs. And what he said was so profound. He said, it's from other entrepreneurs that I learned the most, and I can never stop learning. And I thought, how cool is that from a top South African billionaire to have that mindset where other people in their 20s are so arrogant and they don't want to learn anymore. They believe they know everything. So I think it's super important.
Well, listen, congrats on the book, because we'll get into some of this just now. You just gave me my copy, so I'm kind of skimming through it while we're talking. But 90 Rules for Entrepreneurs, The Codex of Hustle. And you said your guide to being an entrepreneur, a millionaire, and of course, happy. And you've circled happy on the cover. How happy are you right now?
I think you need to define happiness and success for that matter. And for me, that is defined by balance. To have good health, to be financially successful, to have good relationships, to have peace of mind, to enjoy that. And I think sometimes.
Have you got all of that going on at the moment?
I'm so, can I say blessed?
Yeah, blessed. Sure.
No, I'm so blessed and grateful to have that, but I'm constantly working at it to have it. But I think many times you see entrepreneurs and they're just chasing the money. They're eating pizza till 11 at night. They've got no health going for them. They neglect their relationships and their partners. They've got money, but they don't have anything else. And I think it's time to create that balance. And that's true happiness for me, at least.
Well, I mean, again, everybody's balance is also different. So, you know, some people, it's more important to have a very powerful set of relationships, for example, than to have a big bank balance. And
for sure,
for those people, those kinds of interactions would matter more than the transactions. For some people, it would be the transactions. For some people, it would be physical happiness in terms of health and being able to go to sleep at night knowing that your body's in good shape. But I suppose everybody has a different sliding scale on each of those categories that you've just mentioned. Are you one of those people who, when you reach a point, I mean, I actively, it's like I'm not a gamer, but I actively sometimes stop in my life and go, like, if this was a game, I would save now. Like, you know how when you were a kid and you played games,
I love that.
You'd go save game, and then and you can go back to that moment. If you fuck up in the next year, then I'll go back to my save game and just start there again. Because that's the way you got to think about life sometimes, like a game. But some people would say happy is a bit of a complicated term to throw in, especially to the cover. You know, you could have dealt with happy in the book, but you put it on the cover, which means you believe it can be reached. A lot of people, when you say you're happy, they read that as complacent, which I know you're not. It's a line. It's a fine line, though. If you're happy, you can very easily fall into complacent, or you can be one of those people who's got a great life. Like, you wake up in the morning, you can do whatever you want every day. You've got meaningful interactions with people. You've got a business that you're proud of that's generating you income. You can travel the world. You can have holidays. You can drive the car you want, but you're still not happy. They're those two kinds of people that fall on either side of the happy line. How do you know? How do you know where you are?
I think for me, and I've said it in this interview, and I mentioned it a couple of times in the book, and it's an important thing for me, is to get that journey right, because I think we're always focusing on the destination. We're saying, when I get that, I will be happy. And when you get that, if you were happy, it would have been cool, but you never, and you're looking for the next thing and next thing and next thing, and before you know it, you're 70 years old in a retirement village and you're still not happy. So you need to get that journey right.
Look, I mean, there are also people who are just unhappy. Everything can go right or wrong for them. It wouldn't change a damn thing.
100%. Yeah. 100%. I'll share an interesting story with you in a in a bit if you want to about that. Where were we? Oh, to complacent, I think there are many people who look at me as an example and say you're always chasing, and that means that you're not happy with where you are right now. But that's also not the case. You can always be chasing. You can always be better, but to enjoy the moment. And as I said, I really believe that that balance is true happiness. And you say, for some people, relationships are more happy, and I agree with that. But if you don't have money, you're struggling financially.
Oh, sure.
You can have great relationships.
I think you need above 50% in all of those categories to be on the Maslow's hierarchy at the point anywhere near self-actualization, right? Otherwise, you're in the swamp.
For sure.
If you're living like you guys were when your mom couldn't bring home any food for you, I mean, that's survival. You can't start thinking about philosophy and art when you're in survival mode.
Sure.
You can't be the kind of person who's going to get into an intellectual discussion with someone about land expropriation when all you need is to fill your stomach at the end of a very hard day and feed your kids or keep a roof on the house. You know, it's different levels of. So 50%, I'd say, is the minority.
I want to take it a little bit further. And we talk about not having food and all of that. But also, I think 90% of the lives that South Africans live are completely in debt, stressing, not having enough money. So I really think if you can push behind that, you're on your path.
Well, I mean, one of the things I mentioned right at the start of this is that your kind of defining story is that 24th birthday where you didn't have debt. Now, only 2 years before, you'd come to Johannesburg with just this rented bucky and the small amount of money you had in the bank. How do you get rid of debt? Like, and this is a practical question, and there might be something you say now that helps one person to just eliminate debt from their lives. What's the way to approach this attitude-wise?
I think if we look at personal finances, we look at business and entrepreneurship, I say many times we're looking for all these complicated answers, but 90% is just common sense. And why are people in debt? Because they're flying above their income. They're trying to impress the guy next door.
Next door doesn't care.
But
he's not thinking about you.
For sure. And he's also in debt to try and impress you. So that's the thing. We try and impress. I think the young generation's got a big problem with that. It's about competing. It's about the Instagram post that you want to compete with. And you get yourself into debt. And then you get trapped in this thing where you can't exit your business. You can't exit your corporate career because you're dependent on this money. You can't have the freedom to go and start your own business. And it's keeping people trapped until 40, 50, 60, and then they regret an entire lifetime instead of just putting 3, 4, 5 years of your young life aside and say, for the next 5 years, I'm not going to spend. I'm just going to hustle. I'm going to create a business, or I'm going to create something for me, create the platform, and from there I can fly.
I do want to come back to your story about the guy who was never happy, because I think there's something in that we've got to get to. But while you bring up young people and kind of getting it right and being able to dedicate yourself to X, Y, and Z and not that instant gratification. You famously hire only millennials, and you want young people with a young energy. How hard is it, first of all, to find that talent? Second of all, we hear a lot of good and bad things about young people in the workplace. How much of it do you find to be true and false? And finally, do you think that it's too hard in some situations to give people an opportunity if they are just into self-gratification and maybe they're a bit lazy? I mean, what's your discovery here? Because you've got a number of real people in real positions.
Number one, I think it's very challenging. We hire young because we've got a dynamic and energy in our company. We want to be fast moving. It's very difficult to change old habits. So we'll rather bring in someone young and fresh with energy and who is embracing change. But it's very difficult to find, because those youngsters, they walk in, they just finished a degree, they don't have a job, they don't have any experience. They want to be called the manager and they want to earn 100K a month, and they don't understand why they can't get it. Also, our environment is, we work flexi hours, you need to take responsibility, and the youngsters just don't do that. So it's very challenging, but not all things are equal. There are definitely great people out there.
How do you motivate a millennial? How do you discipline them?
For us, it's all about incentives. We create incentives for everything. So we say, you run your own business. It's not about coming in 49 and earn the same salary. There's incentives for everything. So the more you do, the more you get paid. And luckily we could create systems around that, and it's really working for us. And I think that's a great way to.
Does that involve a lot of procedure? I mean, you talk about creating systems. Does that mean you actually have, you know, performance appraisals, reports, that kind of thing, minutes in meetings, you know, the complicated, boring administrative stuff that gives you an idea at the end of the year of what that person's really done?
Mm. So some of it is easy. Some of it is more complicated. So I think depending on positions. So for many years, salespeople are getting commission. You bring in more sales, you get more commission. But I think we can do it with so many other positions in organizations. If people are looking after customer service, it's important to you, because when customers leave, it's affecting the bottom line. So why not incentivize the customer support on the amount of terminations? They reduce that, they get incentivized. And by letting the individuals win, the company win automatically.
Tell me the story about the guy who was never happy.
No, it's something.
We were talking about people who are never happy.
So it's a guy, his name is Michael Roach, and I share his story in my talks. But he was an American, and he went to India, met a Dalai Lama, and then he wanted to become a monk. But they said to him, he can't. They'll take him to New York. They'll teach him at night in a monastery the principles behind, in this case, Buddhism. Yeah. But in daytime, he must run a business. And then they created a massive company, fastest growing company in New York, sold it to Warren Buffett for $250 million. And I had an opportunity to meet him last year. So I spent three incredible days with him. And the one thing he told me was the concept around emptiness. And he used this example where he said that we've all got this very, very irritating person in our lives, right? Everyone's got that one person. You have an irritating person in your life?
Mm-hmm.
A couple.
Yeah, oh, plenty.
And when you
I think I'm the most irritating person in my life.
And when you look at that person, it's just all you see is you're irritated, and you believe it must be the same for everyone else. And you try and convince other people, geez, Gareth is so irritating. And then other people might say to you, no, he's actually not that bad. And you actually try and convince them.
I'm sorry. I think I'm the irritating people in other people's lives.
But you've also got irritating people. But even take that.
Yeah.
Someone perceives you super irritating.
Yeah.
But there's one thing that proves you wrong about that, it's coming from that person. And because that person has got a wife, children who love them, people who can't wait to go out with them tonight. And he uses that analogy to say that life is never coming to you, but always from you. So you can see the good in someone. You can see the bad in someone, depending on your own past, beliefs, thoughts,
yeah,
whatever. And the same for happiness. Like, you can look at life and be miserable with everything that happens around you. And it's this concept of emptiness. And in business, when the economy is contracting at 2%, government just announced one entrepreneur will go out there and he'll say that, wow, I can create a billion-rand company. There are so many opportunities. And another one will go out and say, I can't even manage my million-rand business in this economy. But it's never coming to us. It's always coming from us. And I think there are just some people who will always look at life, regardless of situation, anything, who will always see the bad, who will always be unhappy. And it always reminds me of that concept of emptiness. Like, you can do whatever to someone, they would just never be happy, because it's not coming from external. It's always internal. Like, nice Buddha's lesson for you.
Well, no, I think that's very helpful. Are you a sort of spiritual, religious person? I mean, is that an important part of your life?
I wouldn't say religious, spiritual person. I work a lot on my mind. I'm fascinated by the concepts around specifically Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. What do you do? Read?
I meditate. Every single morning. It's a big thing. But
or TM, you kind of sit for 20 minutes, clear your mind.
I've done TM, but yeah. So for me, silent meditation, sometimes guided. I've done TM courses, and I've done it in the past. But I think there's such a big myth around meditation. And also, we're talking religion now, and meditation comes up. But meditation is actually, it shouldn't be associated with.
Meditation is brain training in some way. It doesn't have to have a spiritual component. It can if you want it to, I suppose.
For sure. When I met Michael last year, he said he wished the Western world can forget about this word meditation. Mm. And what he wants it to be called is coffee thinking. And I said, what do you mean with that? He said, in the morning when you wake up, you must go make yourself a cup of coffee and then just sit for 10 minutes and think about one thing. Focus on one thing.
I could do that. I've never been able to meditate, but that, what you've just explained now, I think I could do. I mean, most mornings I wake up and it's a hurry. It's a rush to kind of get my day started. And that's often why I'm in such a mood.
But that
you give yourself a few minutes. How long? Yeah. What is your process? What do you do?
Yeah. So I think that's the problem with meditation. People think that you need to sit like a funny monk and you need to be in a weird position, but it's not. It's thinking about one thing and putting your focus on something.
So I want to actually get into your life for a second. So you wake up what time? Do you wake up the same time every morning?
3:45 every morning.
Jesus. 3:45.
And I don't have a 5 o'clock radio show.
Well, what are you doing? So why would you do that? What time do you get to sleep at night?
I've got the same routine every single day. So I wake up 3:45.
Is that important?
It's from the UK, so it might be.
Maybe you should answer it. All right. So what happens?
So I wake up 3:45, and then,
do you have the same number of hours of sleep a night?
I try to be in bed by 9, giving me a 7 hour sleep. Then I wake up, I meditate. At the moment, I'm doing a beautiful guided meditation for 6 weeks. It's the same meditation every morning for 20 minutes. Then I get dressed, I go to gym, 5 o'clock, I start gym.
You've got a mantra?
No. So TM is that's common in TM meditation, but at the moment it's a guided meditation actually about the law of attraction. So I'm using that
all
app.
Right, but hang on. So are there other people in your house?
Yes.
Did you bother them?
So I've built myself this me room.
You have a capsule that you go into.
My capsule.
So you don't bother other people. Okay. And then you sit there and you do your thing, which is unique to you. Like, this is how it should be. You build this to suit yourself. It's got to do with the laws of attraction. I'm sort of understanding that. You sit there with a cup of coffee.
I actually make myself either green tea or lemon water in the morning.
It's very healthy, this. Okay. I'm sure lots of us are feeling like underachievers. No. This is important. And then how long do you sit there?
At the moment, it's 20 minutes, but I'll usually spend 20 to 30 minutes there.
Okay.
So the important thing of this.
Have you had a shower yet?
No.
You've woken up. You probably look like shit. You probably don't feel like waking up every morning at 3:45. Nobody does.
Sometimes
but
I don't.
But you get into it.
Yes.
And this is your routine. And yes. It gives you something that you build your day on.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
I mean, that's practical.
Yes. I'll give you two reasons why it's great. Number one is, if you don't do that and you wake up and you're late and you're rushing and everything is just reactive, you wake up late, then the phone calls are already coming in. You just can't plan anything. You can't do anything. Yeah. The second thing is when you wake up like that, no one expects anything from you. So between 4 and 7, it's your time. Regardless of how bad the day goes, you'll go to bed at night knowing that at least one thing went amazingly well. And that was
your time.
Your time.
Okay. So what do you do between 4 and 7 after you've done your meditation? Do you catch up on emails?
So then I go to gym, 5 to 6:30.
Okay.
Then I'm back. Then I get a shake and I just sit for another 30 minutes. Then I get showered at 8 o'clock.
Restful. Doesn't this sound peaceful and restful and wonderful? It's the opposite of most people's start of their days. This could be the key. Yeah.
Gary, sometimes I fall out of routine, and those are the worst weeks of my life. That's when business doesn't go well. That's when me personally don't go well. It's so important for me.
This is very helpful, man. I think there are probably going to be people who are going to change their whole routine as a result of this conversation.
But it's not easy.
I know a lot of people who look up to you. A lot of people who look up to what you've done in business, but this is more about how you live your life than just how you do business. This isn't how you handle yourself in a meeting or how you do a deal or which clients you approach or whether or not you understand accounting. Those things don't matter as much as this.
I think it's important because you must first create this mind of an entrepreneur before you can become the entrepreneur. So you're talking about how I react in meetings. How I react in meetings is directly influenced by this, well, because now I can be a lot calmer.
You're focused. Yeah. You've had enough sleep. You're not grouchy and grumbly and irritated by everybody. You're not going to allow those external factors that we were talking about a minute ago to impact on you as much as if you were fragile.
Yep.
Makes sense.
For sure.
I mean, I hate to sound like an idiot, but this is a bit of an aha, even for me. Jesus. I upset my whole – now I have to go to sleep early. I mean, I try, but it's so inconsistent.
Yeah. But I think that's a big thing is it's difficult to get into routine, but you just need to be consistent. And you need to set some rules. And my rule is I need to be in bed by 9. So if I'm later out, I won't wake up the next morning. So people say, I can't wake up early. Then go to bed early.
Go to bed early. Stop complaining, making it other people's problem. You want to be like a family man?
So I'm in a relationship at the moment. I value relationships. Kids isn't part of the equation at the moment. And
could
not
change,
for the foreseeable future.
You're leaving the door open, but it's not a priority.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I think that's also very mature. Do you get shit from people for that?
Some people say I'm at an age where I need to decide now, but I don't feel
you
need
to
be pressured into that kind of thing. I'm 32.
Okay. Don't worry about them. Do what, if it feels right for you. I mean, I know people who are terrific parents and I know people who are probably not the best parents. And the thing that separates them is that they decided very often, I'm going to have a kid, or it just happened to them, you know, and then you can't turn that back.
For
you
sure.
can't. That's going to be a loss-making enterprise, believe it or not, from a business point of view. It doesn't mean that you can't have great fulfillment with a child. Okay, so it's not something you're focused on. Do you think there's an element of what the world is like that makes you think it's not worth bringing a kid in, or is this purely a selfish decision based on what you want out of your own life? Or do you think the world's a shit place and you don't want to bring kids into it?
No, I don't think the world is a shit place. I think the world is an amazing place, and I would love to give someone that opportunity. But I think kids is sometimes a selfish thing that parents do, because I want a kid, so now
ego.
I'm going to bring – yeah. Okay. Yes, ego, or I want to do it. But I just feel like I'm not at the point right now where I can give the best life to a kid. I'm still traveling a lot, still devoting a lot of time to business. So I just feel at the moment I can't give the best life to a kid.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you probably give a better life to a kid than most kids in South Africa would have. So what kind of a – I know this is very superficial, but I want to know what kind of a life you lead, because people do take cues from this stuff, even if I don't. Where do you live? What kind of a house are you in? What sort of day-to-day stuff do you do? Like, what's an experience in your shoes like?
Mm. So I stay in Benmore Gardens in –
Okay.
I'm not a material
house
guy.
Flat. What are we talking?
Yeah, it's a cluster. So
lots of bedrooms.
Three, four bedrooms.
That's good.
Three.
One of them is your study.
One of them is my study. A spare room. Another study and another.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And but I've never been a material.
Are you into
material
cooking and shit or not really?
Shit. I've never been a material guy, so I just want to get back to that. So I don't have this dream of – I don't want to stay in this
castle.
Big mansion. I'm actually simplifying, and I think less is more. So I'm trying to reduce as much as I possibly can. Cooking, I've got someone who cooks for me.
Good.
And just take
– You don't want to – it's a decision you don't need to make, right?
Yes, but I just think it takes...
Like that idiot Zuckerberg, he puts on the gray shirt every day so he doesn't have to decide on the outfit. So he's eliminating unnecessary decision-making through the course of his day. Is that kind of how you and food are?
Yes. So it's not that I don't decide. I decide, but I just get someone else to prepare it for me, because it's going to take time out, and I would rather like to spend it on other things. But other people love cooking, and that's also great
thing.
For them.
I mean, some people will think you're an idiot for meditating. I mean,
yes.
Everybody has their thing. So then you get in the car and you go off to work. You have an office that you're in every day, or do you have a number of offices, because you've got a number of businesses?
Yes. So I'm part of Transaction Capital now, and we've got a couple of offices, but I'm based in one of them with meetings in the others. But and then I try one or 2 days at least a week just to spend it at home, working from my own space, no distraction. And those days
are that the most productive time?
It is productive because when you're at the office, there's always people coming in and not bothering you, just distracting you. So I like to spend at least 1 day a week just at home to focus on important things. So I've got this new habit of between 6 and 8. So 6 in the evening to 8 in the morning, I say it's me time. So I'm going to spend it on the stuff that I want to do. From 8 to 6, it's work time. So it's 10 hours dedicated to work.
I think you've got to have these structures in place so that your life can be orderly. If you do have that time to yourself between 6 and 8, what do you do? I mean, do you have particular hobbies and interests? Is that where you get to spend time with friends and family and relationships and that kind of thing? Or are you like a voracious reader, for example? What do you do during that time?
So there's not a lot of time left because from 4 to 8 in the next morning, I've already explained, gym, meditate, whatever.
You've got a routine.
So
then
from 6 to 9, there's not a lot of time before I go to bed. So at weekdays, I try not to do events. I try to stay at home and just recharge.
What are you doing? You play cards? I mean, what do you do? What's your hobby?
No, I read. So six, I would read the newspaper. Then I'll eat. I'll read books.
Because you said earlier that this thing about, see, I've got a problem. I'm kind of using you as a bit of a bouncing board for a lot of my own shit today. But it's because I think you've got a good brain and you can probably help a lot of us. I'm interested in so many things and I want to learn about so many things that I very seldom can focus enough on the one thing in order to be the best at it.
Yes.
It frustrates the hell out of me.
Yes.
So I'll be interested in architecture, history, science, tech, whatever it might be. And I'll go through these stages, and I'm sure this happens to a lot of people, so it's not odd, where you are obsessed with something and you're spending your waking hours and your sleeping hours dreaming about it. And then it'll go away and you'll move on to the next thing. Are you like that about business?
I am. So I can't relate to that, but my whole life evolves around business and entrepreneurship. So when I read The Business Day at 6, it's still kind of work related, but it's actually not. It's, for me, it's cool to see what companies are doing and what the results are. I just finished the story of Airbnb last night. So it's a business book or the story of Airbnb. So everything evolves around business.
Sure. But that's cool because then it does give you a province that you can travel in. It does give you a place where you can become the best at that subject, and certainly for your own purposes, to enlighten yourself to the best possible degree.
Well, sure. I think focus is so important, and there are so many distractions, but I like to align everything towards the bigger goal. So when I read books, I'd like to put it in something that I'm working towards.
Okay, what I'm also really curious about is when you got here with rented Bucky and the 37,000 Rand, you had a dream of the apartment in Sandton and the 30 grand a month. Now, what is the goal for, the modernist 5 years from now or 10 years from now? What are the things that you would earmark as being – because a lot of people would say you've achieved most of the things that most people would dream about. What's the next big, hairy, audacious goal situation for you? How do you project that kind of – how do you visualize that kind of future?
Yes, it's a very interesting thing. I think for,
by the way, someone will dig this podcast out in 10 years time and say, look, why did you do it?
Be careful though. So no, I think the funny thing for me is, for so long in my life, I was driven, with money and cash. And then, but I'm no longer. So it definitely changed for me. And
how did that change? Because that's not a small thing.
I think a combination of two things. One, you're making more money, but two, I'm taking a more minimalistic life and I don't want these possessions. I've got no dream of having a yacht. I will go and rent one for a day and leave the maintenance to someone else. Mm-hmm. But then I reached a point where I could get everything I want, essentially. And that changes money because if you can get everything you want, why would you want more cash? And I just can't relate with these
once you have a hammer,
material things.
Once you have a hammer, you can hit any nail.
Yeah, for sure.
It doesn't occur to people that once they've got enough money, it's a tool.
For sure.
And you become very unromantic about it.
For sure. And other people are not the same. They're chasing forever, bigger house, bigger, better car. I'm not like that. So that fundamentally changed that perception. So what is it right now? I'd like to, for the next 2 years, so I don't know 5 years, but 2 years, what I want to do is I just want to grow a new business that I'm involved in now. And then I just want to take a sabbatical for 6 months. That's all
Where
I
would you
do.
Go? What would you do during this sabbatical? This sounds very romantic.
I've always wanted to do that. I've never had off time. And I think
you get so bored. 5 days, you'll be killing yourself.
You know what? In December, when I go away for 2 weeks, I can't wait to get back. But I want to do that just to chill and then take on the next phase of my life.
Sounds to me like you've also met a lot of the people you wanted to meet in terms of people you might look up to in business, people whose brains you want to pick, people you want to learn from. Would you spend that sabbatical trying to engage with those people?
I think it would be any people. I learn a lot from the guy on the street. I love traveling. I learn from just those perspectives and perceptions. So for me, it's not always about the successful guys, the celebs.
No, sometimes it's meeting people who you didn't expect to be amazing and interesting and hearing their stories, and it can change everything for you.
For sure.
Okay, so would you go away?
Yes, I think travel definitely will be the majority of it, if not everything.
How would you disconnect from work? How would you get that right? Your phone is with you all the time.
I think at that stage I would like not to be involved in businesses.
Okay.
Yeah.
You think it's going to happen, this sabbatical? You think it's actually going to happen?
Yeah, I wanted to do it.
I don't doubt that you can make things. I, by no means am I saying you're not the kind of person who can make your own realities happen, but this is going to be tough. You love what you're doing. Yeah.
No, for sure. But I just think like when I finished school, I was working like 16-hour days. I was always studying, always busy, started businesses, always busy. And then actually 2 years ago, I thought I'm going to take this mini sabbatical. Then that didn't happen. Went on to Shark Tank on Mnet. That just blew up the entire thing.
What's that like? I mean, I know Vinny and Gil. I don't know any of the others. And this is the first time I met you.
Wait. You know Dawn? Because
how do I know Dawn?
Dawn was the CEO of Europcar.
Oh Jesus! I know who she is.
Because Dawn told me a story about you complaining about a rental car, and she gave you some or other VIP pack because she gave me the same thing. Do you remember that?
That's Dawn. Okay, I do know her. All right, but I don't think we've spent time with each other.
No.
I certainly know who she is in terms of what she did for a living. Then she's not there anymore. She's running her own stuff.
Yeah.
But, okay. Mm. So, but Gil, I know well. Yes. He's a fantastic human being. Mm. Such a good energy. Mm. I think I could take Gil in small doses.
Yeah.
Like, I would say he's a friend. I don't think that's claiming too much, but I see Gil maybe every 6 months, and that's enough. He's exhausting.
Yes. He's a
dynamo.
For sure.
And, Vinny is such a smart guy, but he's got such a big heart. Mm. Right? Now, out of all these people in the Shark Tank, who's the most hardcore and difficult of you? Who's the one that they struggle to please? These poor fuckers who come up and try to sell you their – I mean, it's the most awful situation to put anyone in front of a panel of successful people.
Yeah.
Some person who's already full of self-doubt, or they're overwrought with hubris and are going to screw it up before they even tried. Who's the toughest to please?
He's definitely not the cruelest, but the toughest to please would be Romeo Kumalu. Yeah. He's been involved in such big businesses and big ventures. And I think Gil and Vinny, they're so optimistic. They'll see everything working if you just
Romeo's include. Like, nah.
And Romeo is a very tough guy to please.
And you? Do you think you intimidate these people?
For me, these small businesses are a difficult thing to start off with. Small businesses take a lot of time, and very often it's not worth the effort that you put into those small businesses. And many times people come onto the show, they've got this idea and think with a little bit of cash or help, they're going to be the next big thing, and they're not going to be. So I'm very honest with that, and honest to the entrepreneurs to say that it won't work. And I don't try and be optimistic about something that I know won't work. So I think I've been tough on the show, but it's just the reality out there in the market.
Do you have people emailing you ideas all the time?
Oh, jeez.
Do you have someone who sifts through that and throws out a lot of the crap? Because there's a lot of crap.
There's a lot.
You can't look at all of it. Tell me you can.
No,
you'd be
definitely
lying.
Not.
Drive you mad.
No, you can't. And people don't always understand that. If I had to reply or look at it, that would become a full-time business. And as I said, like these small businesses, if you build a million-rand business or you work in a 100-million-rand business, it's taking exactly the same time. I'll go as far as to say in the million-rand business, you're probably going to spend more time because there's more issues. So these small businesses are very difficult to get involved in.
Is there a thing you want to do desperately? You did mention this other company, but I don't want to go into that because it sounds like it's still very much embryonic. But is there stuff that you want to do for your own happiness, whether it's, I mean, you're the one who circled happy. In this thing. Is there stuff you want to do for your own happiness that falls outside of the work world that you might not even get in the sabbatical? Who knows? You might run into something that changes your life in there as well. But is there a part of you that's unfulfilled at this stage?
I can honestly say not. I've got a nice balanced life that I work hard every day to get right. For me, what I live for is helping other business owners to be successful as entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And that's all the businesses that I'm involved in. We help small business owners. So that's like, if you want to call it passion, but it's also generating my income. So I'm happy with all of that. And that would just be a journey, an ongoing journey.
How much of your success would you put down to discipline?
Discipline and consistency, 100%.
Really? More than anything else?
100%.
You're saying they're probably smarter people than you, they're probably more ambitious people than you, but your discipline and your consistency are your secret weapons.
For sure. I think the mind is the number one thing. To get your mind right and then to execute on that. There's a lot of people who want to be successful and they'll try it out for 3 months and then it will fade away. But these things aren't short term and it's consistent day after day with challenges, with no challenges, to keep grinding. I say in my book and I always say this, like if for 3 years, if you commit to something, if you wake up early, if you read 10 books on it, if you commit your life to that, there's no ways in hell that you can't be successful in that. There's no ways. But people want instant gratification, instant success. It doesn't come in this world.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect note to wrap it up on. I love talking to you, man. You're a very easy guy to talk to. I can understand why people like you. They really do like you. You know that, right? You get that feedback.
Thanks, Gareth.
People say nice things about you. And usually, you know, business people are not in a hurry to admit their competition, because it's often competition, is a worthy opponent. They often like to disregard those people or to say, yeah, they're okay, because it becomes competitive, especially men and egos and all that stuff. But I think you've definitely done incredible things in your life that are praiseworthy, and more especially than that, people like you. It's good.
Thank you, sir.
Good to be modernous.
Thank you, sir.
It's a pleasure to see you, man.
Thanks, man.
Awesome. We'll catch up again soon.
Hopefully not in the next 32 years.
Well, who knows? I don't leave my house much anymore. I hardly see anybody.
You're going to go to bed at 9
now.
Oh,
huh? God. You've ruined my life. Artemis Broderick, everybody.
This is CliffCentral.com.